What are you wanting to do today, this morning, is look at in a little bit more detail some of the things that got brought up last Sunday and reflecting on my notes of what I have for today. It really strikes me that there's what I think will be sort of our traditional way of looking at meditation and talking about meditation, which is certainly how I understood meditation in the very beginning when I was taught how to meditate and so on. And then we have Great Master Dogen's way of understanding meditation. And of course, he's taking us to a deeper level based on how we experience meditation, how we practice meditation. In one of our previous book group books, we briefly covered what are called Tozan's five ranks. And Tozan actually talked about different perspectives, different shifts in how we understand, how we experience reality, experience ourselves, how we experience training and practice in terms of what unfolds as we continue on in the practice. So I see that what I'm going to present is, in essence, kind of along the lines of what Tozan's five ranks are pointing to, in the sense that there can be these very significant shifts in our understanding, our experiencing of reality and life. And what I'm wanting to touch on is sort of the two, showing kind of the transition between one place of understanding and another place of understanding and experience. So to start off with this, just bring up a typical memory of when you're meditating formally. It doesn't exclusively have to be when you're meditating. It can just be during your, when you're on with your regular day. Thoughts arise, emotions arise, physical sensations arise. And maybe bring to mind times when what's arising can be very strong. It's not just sort of the ordinary, everyday, kind of all the thoughts that come and go all the time. It's more something that has a stronger impression than that. Okay, so kind of keep that aspect in mind as I go on. Now, a number of things that we touched on last week that Shohaku Okamura mentions in the book Realizing Genjo Koan, I want to pull out some of those quotes and look at them. So, just for reference, on page 64 of the book, he says, "In meditation, with only the wall in front of us, it's easy to see that thoughts are illusions." And then he goes on to say, "And the reason we see they're illusions is because when we let go, those thoughts disappear." So there are three aspects, three important key things that he mentions in those two sentences. And I'd really like to look very closely at each one of those. The first one is he uses the word illusion. What's he mean by that? The other thing, the next thing he says is when we let go, what is we letting go, or us letting go, or me letting go, what does that mean? And then he says, those thoughts disappear. we actually have to clarify, look at in more detail, what does he mean by disappear? Okay. So the first one to look at is the word illusion. So for example, an illusionist creates illusions, and basically what's being created there is an illusion. Is it looks like something is happening, it looks like something's going on, it looks like there's something there, but it's actually not there. It looks like something's going on, but what we think is going on actually isn't going on. So as an example of that, I think we've all experienced one way or another a mirage. Been out in Central Oregon or somewhere out in the desert west on a hot sunny day, you look down a long road and you see water in the distance. Okay, so that's what I'm meaning by a mirage or an illusion as a first way of looking at it, is that there appears to be water up ahead, and there actually isn't. But the really important thing to also be aware of is that there is something going on. There's a phenomena going on. There's an event going on. We can take a photograph of it and show it to another person. I know I've seen documentaries, I've seen movies, cowboy westerns and stuff, where they're actually filming a mirage, you know, and showing water in the distance. So something is going on, but what we think is going on actually is not the case. Now, as another example, we've all seen rainbows. And a rainbow is also an illusion in this sense. It's also a phenomena, an event that's happening. You can take very beautiful photographs of it. They have them on movies, documentaries, and so on. It's a phenomena that happens when certain things come together, certain very known things come together. We have a name for it, a rainbow. We think of it as a thing, a substantial thing. But if you've ever tried walking towards one, it just keeps receding from you. And of course, the bit about there being a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, I think that in modern way of talking about that, that's what we have one level of understanding. I think talking about a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, I think that actually has probably historical roots in a very spiritual teaching, some of which I'm kind of hinting at the moment. So with an illusion, part of what Okamura is pointing to is that it's not actually a substantial thing that's going on. And what this does too is that it ties into, he says that we see that thoughts are illusions because when we let go, those thoughts disappear. And part of the thing about a mirage or a rainbow is that it touches on what's being meant by disappearing. So you may have experienced, there's a rainbow, and then there are clouds in the sky, and a cloud moves in front of the sun. And we would say, the rainbow has just disappeared. But what's really important to realize here is that the word disappear in this case is not being used in the sense of it went somewhere else. And if we just go to that somewhere else, we'll find it again. When it disappears, it's just not there anymore. And the really significant thing is that the disappearing in this case has to do with when conditions change, it's just not, the conditions are such that what we thought of as a rainbow, what we thought of as a mirage, it's just simply not there. So what's being implied here is that thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, they arise, they come into being, which is maybe a better way of putting it. They come into being, arise when there are certain conditions, certain factors that are involved. And they're not there when conditions change. So this is what is being meant by illusions in the sense that they're not substantial, they're impermanent. Impermanent implying that, as we all know, things change, and part of that changing is the very conditions that brought it into being aren't there anymore, so it's not there anymore. Okay, so then we get to my mind what the real active ingredient is in that statement, which is, you know, I'm sure all of us follow the fact that, you know, we know what disappearing means. It's just, you know, it's just not there anymore. We also are aware of what he's implying by an illusion. He has the phrase, when we let go. And to my mind, that's really the active ingredient, because that's where we come into the picture by how we interact with the thoughts, the emotions, the physical sensations. And just to reduce it to its most basic form, we hold on, we push away. And when we let go means when we let go of holding on or pushing away. Now, right within this, I could take this in two different directions. I'm going to take it in the direction of how I initially understood meditation practice. And the other way we're going to go just a little while is the way Great Master Dogen understands meditation. So the more traditional way of understanding meditation is we recognize, oh, I'm holding on. I'm continuing to engage in thinking while I'm meditating. I'm pushing away during meditation. Don't want to go there. Don't want to feel that. Don't want to look at that. I recognize I'm pushing away. I recognize I'm holding on. And one does one's best to put that down. But what's very active in this whole thing is that, at least from my experience, my perspective, and so on over the years, is there's actually a me in there that's being aware of holding on or pushing away. There's a me in there that's letting go of holding on and pushing away. So over time, and I very much remember experiencing this very vividly, over time, there's a me or a self that's over and over again depriving itself of all of these things. You know, kind of unburdening itself from all of this stuff that we're holding on to or pushing away. And the me, the self, over time can very much be aware that oh, this is actually really going in the trajectory of dying. And a lot of fear, anxiety can arise too. And there's a very interesting, for myself, there's an interesting pattern that happens here, an interesting loop that you get into. It's okay, now fear's arising, now anxiety's arising, now, fear of death is arising. Well, don't hold on to that, don't push that away, let that go too. But to the degree that there's a me or a self still saying, I need to let go, I'm still at times really caught within that dilemma. So it's almost like right to the very edge of what we can kind of see or be aware of, it's still all about a me. It's still all about a self. And it's not been a linear process in terms of my practice. It kind of jumps around, but there are times when I'm very much in this way of perceiving things and practicing and meditating, but I realize that this fundamentally actually isn't going to work. This whole thing about it's like, okay, I'm stripping myself of everything. Well, no, I'm not. I'm still a self. I'm still a me. A very stripped down one. Another way of actually describing the way this gets talked about, what I've just been presenting here with this way of meditating, is that it's described as basically taking the witness sort of stance. You're witnessing thoughts, feelings, sensations, and so on. You're witnessing everything. What I've been describing, though, is actually a very valid way to do our practice, and it goes quite a long distance. I've put down a lot of unhelpful habits in doing this. But we actually need a radical shift here. And coming at it from the place I've been describing, we can use terms like dropping off body and mind. That's pretty radical. Dropping off self, dropping off the me. There are the phrases about, the dark night of the self, the dark night of the soul. All again, very much things that we experience at times. But let's take a look at how Dogen approaches all of this. To my mind, what I've been doing to kind of help with tracking the territory that I just talked about, it's sort of taking it can be described as the position of everything that arises is an illusion, kind of as a way of marking that territory. So these are quotes from page 67 and 68 in the Realizing Genjo Koan book. And Okamura says, there's no separation between the person who experiences and the objects that are experienced. And he says further, there is no me that exists other than the things that make up my body and mind. Each one of us are all the things that we experience. We're created by them. And then he says, I and you and all other beings do not exist at all, only relationships and interactions exist. In other words, relationships and interactions are all the things that we experience. That's a very, very different orientation that's coming at things from a very, very different place than saying things are illusions relative to a person meditating. Dogen is saying that it's the thoughts, the emotions, the physical sensations, that's who we are. Or another more simpler way of saying it is, there is only the thought, the emotion, the sensation. And a way I've used to describe this, and I think I've just sort of integrated this way of saying it from hearing other seniors in the order. So when I say there is only the thought, the emotion, or the sensation, when sadness arises, there's just sadness. When loneliness arises, there's simply loneliness. The same is also true for anger, fear. When judgment arises, there is just judgment. When desire arises, there is just desire. When a memory arises, there's just the memory. When there are painful physical sensations arising, there's just the painful physical sensation. So what do I mean by using the word just? And part of what I'm implying there is that when it's just the feeling, just the physical sensation, just the memory, just the judgment, that's right or correct practice or meditation, according to Dogen. But we need to take a back step here. What typically happens, though? What typically happens, for example, when loneliness arises? Instead of just loneliness, instead of just feeling, we add a step, or we take a step. We add an I, and it becomes, I am lonely, or I am angry, or I am afraid, or I am in physical pain. And going back to where I started all of this, Okamura again reminds us there is no separation between the person who experiences and the objects that are experienced. There's no separation. What we have done is we've added a separation. We've made a separation. And then we create that separation. And then it becomes, I don't want to be lonely. Or I want the object of my desire. Or I don't want to be in physical pain. And we just keep adding to that whole process. We just create this very complex reality of, and I've got these in quotes, getting what we want, avoiding what we don't want, or changing or fixing things. So we've gone from just loneliness or just physical pain or just judgment or just desire to this whole complex situation with a me wanting to get what it wants or wanting to change or fix things. And this is where the law of causality, where the law of karma all comes into play. And probably kind of talking about tracing out that trajectory would be a whole other talk. But one thing that comes to mind is that when thoughts, emotions, feelings, sensations arise, and we take that next step, separate from that, creating a me, it's a me relative to that thought or feeling or sensation it's temporary, it's impermanent, therefore the self, the separation that we created is going to be temporary and impermanent also. And it's kind of like moment by moment, we take a step back from thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, and moment to moment we create this separate self sense that then slowly decays, is impermanent, fades away. But, you know, like spinning plates on top of the pole, we just keep giving it another nudge, keep spinning that misunderstanding. And then over time, that's where we start realizing that suffering exists. It's within that whole process that we realize the First Noble Truth. And that's going in the direction, again, more of what we could call traditional Buddhist teachings. But then to come back to the real emphasis the Great Master Dogen is placing on things, we must remember that we are the experience. We are what is experienced. At any moment in our meditation, what's experienced is who we are. So the letting go of grasping on or pushing away, which is the very first signs, as it were, of us separating from simply what's there. It's the letting go of the separating me from the experience by just simply being aware of putting down the grasping on or pushing away. We actually return to the experience itself. And although I haven't come across it yet, I think Dogen could say something like, we return to the reality itself. So again, just kind of to emphasize things from in a just slightly different way again, it's like, so we, each one of us, our life is the experience. And in abiding in just loneliness or just fear or just judgment or just desire or just physical pain, then that experience itself, that's front and center stage. So we're actually being fully present with what really is there, instead of, you know, branching off from that and creating this temporary me, this temporary separation. And I use that word about, you know, sort of phrase about front and center stage, because it contrasts nicely to the fact that most of the time we think that I am center stage. Most of us think that, you know, each one of us is center stage. And as I've been describing it, that's not quite getting to the center yet. That's not quite getting to the heart of it. The me is actually something that's standing back from being fully present within what's there. And what that shows, one thing that shows is that I remember many times, in my case, when I had certain very painful physical sensations coming up because of, you know, my health situation at times in my life, I very much remember in my mind saying, I can't handle this, this is too intense. And I remember one time literally turning away from it. It's also really important to realize that yes, there have been times in our lives where that's the best we could do. That was actually our best mode of survival in the positive sense. But as we continue in our practice, deepen our practice, Dogen is encouraging us, pointing us to just be right in the heart of all of this stuff. It's interesting to my mind that when I've become more aware of how ingrained it is that experience arises, and over and over again I separate from that in the form of a me, and then that me says, I want to solve this, I want to fix this. And when I look at that, I'm like, actually, that's kind of funny. So it's like, it just doesn't make any sense that I would distance myself from the actual situation and then say, based on my distanced place, I can now actually work with and somehow resolve the situation I just pulled back from. So our Zen Buddhist practice, our Soto Zen Buddhist practice, as we've received it from Great Master Dogen and others in our lineage, it's fundamentally a practice of very, very deep faith and trust in the reality itself at any moment. And the teaching is that the more we can actually abide within the experience itself, when there is loneliness, just loneliness, when there is pain, just pain, it's the experience itself, it's the reality itself that Soto Zen Buddhism says actually has inherent within it its own resolution, its own way forward. The experience itself, that which we experience, will in and of itself show us the way forward. It's inherently within that. And then it becomes much more just like what we actually read in what we chanted in the scripture of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. First and foremost, what's being shown in each one of those sort of couplets, if you will, is somebody who actually is abiding within the reality of the experience at that moment. And they're actually giving us encouragement, an incredible example, offering us very deep faith and trust that yes, even these horrific situations that these beings find themselves in, we ourselves can actually be just that. In the being just that, the second half of each one of those couplets indicates the resolution unfolds of itself. So over and over, come back to abiding with what is. Reverend Master Daishin Morgan at Throssell, he would say very often, just this. And that's what he was implying. The this is what's there in moment to moment in our lives. So just come back to abiding with just this, and the rest will actually all unfold from that place. And then our bodies, our speech, our minds become the vehicle in which we can actualize, can express that resolving, that unfolding. Okay, I think that's a good place to end.